In the meanwhile, the Chester Beatty Library. It's an oasis in the heart of Dublin city centre, set inside the walls of Dublin Castle. It contains some of the rarest examples of art from Chester Beatty's private collection, which he amassed over the course of his lifetime. The library is running a new exhibition at the moment called the Chester Beatty's A to Z, and Adele Coffey has been along to see it for us and joins me now. Adele, thank you very much indeed for coming into us this morning. It's a beautiful library, the Chester Beatty Library. It is, like, as you say, an oasis of calm. Tell us a bit about the man and how his collection came to live in Dublin Castle.
Well, he's absolutely fascinating. He was born in New York and was a mining engineer there, and he graduated from the Columbia School of Mines in 1898. And he worked his way up in that mining company and became a hugely wealthy man, obviously, and he moved to the UK in 1912. That was after his first wife died, and he became a British citizen in the 30s, and he moved to Ireland in 1950. And we'll talk a bit more about that later, but he was incredibly bright, and he had sort of two stages in his life. He moved to Denver after he graduated, and he went there with just a letter of introduction, and he had no job, nothing, and he brought this letter to a man called T. Arthur Rickard, who was a mining consultant in Denver, and he had married his cousin, who was called Marguerite, and Marguerite's younger sister, Ninette, was visiting from England at the time. And of course, as is often the case, Ninette fell in love with Chester Beatty, and they met in July 1899, and they were married by April in 1900. And it does seem, by all accounts, that they were a really lovely match, and there were lots of references in society columns to their engagement and their wedding and the christening party for their baby daughter, who was also called Ninette, and she was born in 1901. And there's lovely photographs actually in this exhibition. It's not just all of the art artworks. There's also photographs of the family together. There's a beautiful one of
I'm looking at a picture here of Ninette along with two of their children.
Yeah, the baby Chester Jr. was born, and unfortunately, just a couple of years after that picture was taken in 1907, Ninette died of typhoid pneumonia. And it was after that point that Beatty moved to London with the children and also with his brother Gebney, and he married again actually the following year in 1913. He married a divorced New Yorker called Edith Dunn, who was also a big art collector, so it seems like they were very well matched, and they travelled a lot together after that point. In 1914 they went to Egypt, and he spent the next 20 years wintering in Egypt because he had the miner's disease, silicosis, the disease of the lungs.
Obviously he started collecting. I mean, some of the stuff, it's incredibly valuable. Even back then, I'm sure it would have cost an awful lot of money. Did his wealth all come from that brief period of mining?
Yeah, well, and actually it wasn't that brief. He worked like for years in the mining industry, and this was just his passion that he did on the side, essentially. When he went travelling, he would buy things, and like he made his fortune in America in his early years working in mining, and then he set up the Selection Trust in London, which was an international mining firm, which dealt in diamonds and copper. And he was one of the most important figures in 20th century mining, as well as an important collector. And this was just his passion. He had an incredible eye. He was really discerning. He always made the final call. And when I spoke to Fionnuala Croke, who's the director of the Chester Beatty Library, she told me that he would categorise his collection in, you know, A, B, C. He would grade them, and he'd have A1, A2, A3. And if he came across an A2 version of something he had, he would sell the C1 version. He was just incredibly discerning. Yeah.
And applied all that kind of scientific rigour to his collecting, as well as his mining engineering. And, you know, there's no Irish blood in this fella. How did we get so lucky as to get his collection here?
Well, no, there's a tiny tincture of Irish blood in him. It goes back to his paternal grandfather. His paternal grandparents were actually Irish. They came from Armagh and Leash. But that's not necessarily the reason that he came here. He basically came here after there was a bit of a, it seems like he was a bit miffed with the British. Actually, he couldn't get access to his funds.
Some kind of banking laws or regulations?
It was to do with the war, essentially. He travelled abroad every year, so he couldn't get access to those funds, and essentially took the hump and came here. That was actually a real political coup for the Irish. Beatty's move to Ireland.
So I think as you realise as we walk around the exhibition, your eye is just drawn automatically, isn't it, to all the different letters. And what we try to do is just use the alphabet as a simple kind of a framework to draw people into the collection. T seemed to be obviously for travel. Given Chester Beatty's background, given his business interests all over the world, and also, of course, given our rare books, our rare printed book collection. And that collection contained many early travel guides. And the one in the middle is probably my favourite. It was a famous publication called The Most Famous Islands of the World. He includes a 4-page description of Ireland and the people of Ireland. I don't think Tommaso Porcacchi, who wrote this, I don't think he probably ever visited Ireland. He actually drew largely upon an earlier text that was written in Latin in about 1534 by another Italian. And he really didn't do the Irish any favours. Somehow we come out a little bit less than flattering. We come across a little bit wild, which I'm sure we never were.
Right, so that's the director of the library there, Fionnuala Crooks, talking about some of the contents of this. What did you like, Adele, yourself?
Oh, well, there's so much to choose from. And as you heard from that clip, it's done, it's organised in an A to Z sort of way. And there was a little girl singing the alphabet there. It seemed to really captivate the imagination of young and old. And there were lots of tourists there too. But I really loved, I just was again, just kind of captivated by this celestial atlas, which was just so stunningly beautiful. It's a really, really big book. It's completely hand-coloured, so the colours are really intense. There's such a selection of things that you would never come across in Ireland ordinarily. There's Japanese no masks, and no is spelled N-O-H, it's this Japanese form of drama and art and or theatre. And then there's enamel boxes. His Japanese collection is incredible. We actually, outside of Japan, have one of the best collections.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Down to him, essentially. So there. And there was also a really fascinating revolutionary tribunal account from Marie Antoinette from her trial. It's just, again, it's a book, and it's basically the printed, kind of like the court reporter from the day.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And there's
and,
lots
and
of satirical.
And you can see this now if you go into the exhibition.
Yeah, now it's opened on a certain page, so you can't flick
like
through
accounts,
it or anything.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But it's in French, so if you have French, you'll be able to read it. But there's also lots of satirical cartoons around that. And so you can see Marie Antoinette and Louis, they attempted to escape, and he was posing as her hairdresser, and she was there's a picture of him combing her hair, and there's a bidet in the background. It's also it's very, very sort of disrespectful towards them, as it was at the time. But apparently that tribunal account leads right up to her going up the steps to the guillotine. So it's an incredible document.
You'd wonder, wouldn't you, how anybody got their hands on that? Not least an American mining official, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And he did, it seems like, as I said, he was incredibly discerning, and he did a lot of deals as well. But I think the Atlas really was my favourite, and it's the Z of the alphabet. So
we have a clip, I think,
we do, yeah.
Of someone talking about Z for Zodiac here.
So Z is for Zodiac. We have in the case a 17th century celestial atlas that was produced in Amsterdam in 1661. And side by side, we have two 16th century Persian manuscripts also describing the constellations with signs of the zodiac as we would recognise them today.
And the colouring in this?
Well, these are hand-coloured double-page folios in this extraordinary, very large celestial atlas. And this page is really a view of the universe, the celestial theory of the universe according to Copernicus. And there's a little portrait of Copernicus here on the bottom right. So in the centre you have the sun, and radiating out from the sun the various planets according to Copernicus' theory. But of course in the outer layer, as you see, are all the signs of the zodiac beautifully displayed.
God, it sounds fascinating, Adele. Who's visiting the library? Who's there?
Yeah, as you can hear in the background, it was incredibly busy. And this was, you know, at about 11 o'clock on a midday week. And I'd been there the previous weekend as well, and it was packed with tourists. So, I mean, it is inside the walls of Dublin Castle. So
they have a lovely cafe as well, you might
they
say.
They do. Yeah. And also, again, like I said, the oasis in Dublin's heart. There's this beautiful little garden. So it's worth going into if you're just passing through Dublin. But there are lots of tourists there. I met a woman from Washington who was visiting, and she loved, again, the 8 Z thing. She said it was a really good way for a tourist to access this, all this information. But also there was a mother and daughter from Versailles who weren't very happy about the representation of Marie Antoinette.
Really?
Yeah, they said it's very sad memories for us. And then I met a woman called Dawn from Brisbane who was there with her friend Mary. And these were two really good friends from 20 years ago when Mary had lived in Australia. And I started by asking Dawn how she found out about the library.
A friend in Australia who was born in Dublin told me that when I came here, I had to come here. He said, you have to see this place. I mean, he was a voracious collector, but what an eye he had for the most beautiful pieces. And in that little documentary downstairs, he was saying they'd trade him for an old Chevrolet, you know. So he obviously recognized so early on the importance of collecting and caring for and maintaining this collection.
Well, 50 years ago, was it easier to come by these
scripts? Oh, very much easier.
Than now?
And then particularly the last 20, 35 years. You see, young people in the East were all inheriting these libraries.
And then
anyone, they're dirty, the books, in many cases they had worms, and the bindings are falling to pieces. Well, any one of them would trade two or three dozen of those for a Chevrolet.
Two or three dozen for a Chevrolet. That's Chester Beattie himself we're listening to there.
Yeah.
That's amazing to hear him speak.
It is. And actually, there's a lovely little documentary downstairs in the library. So when you just come in, you go into your left and there's this film running on a loop in this room. And it's basically about his life. There's pictures from his early days mining. There's interviews with him when he came to Dublin.
He doesn't sound at all American in that.
No,
does
he doesn't. And I think that's probably the fact that he moved to London in 1912. And also perhaps like the fact that he was quite a gentleman and, you know, everybody spoke differently back then, but it's just lovely to hear his voice and the way he talked and just learning
those.
Do you
get a bit of passion from him for his collecting? I mean, as to why he did all this?
Not really, no. I have to say, I didn't get that from the documentary, but it was obvious that he was incredibly passionate about it. And it is just, I mean, the fact that this collection is ours, it's available free, we can go see it anytime we want. Well, this is on until February, but the fact
that's
that...
That's the A to Z, but there's a permanent collection.
There is a permanent collection,
time,
and it's basically in some cases these items are unique, so go see them while you can.
Great. Well, listen, Adele Coffey, thank you very much indeed. Now, after the break, we will have more on the missing Air Algérie plane.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.